Hello, and welcome to the Wyatt's Haven of Bliss podcast at havenofbliss.com. My name is Wyatt Galen Houts, and today I want to talk about my backpacking trip to Europe that I took last fall. I visited approximately 15 countries in Western Europe to Eastern Europe, and I thought there were some few interesting things that I could tell you in case you ever wish to backpack on your own. Europe is a small area land compared to the United States, maybe one-third of the area, but it has many countries all packed together. And I bought a ticket flying into London and returning out of Munich, Germany, a round trip, and I also purchased a Eurorail, which allowed me to ride the trains. Europe has a wonderful transit system, much better than the United States for traveling around, and I didn't need a car, and I'm kind of glad I didn't because of the way that the roads are laid out in different countries. It would just be confusing after a while. I flew into London and I stayed there a few days. London is reminds me of San Francisco, except a little bit more clean and modern and a little more diversity. I was kind of disappointed that the food could have been better. There really was just some like Indian food and some spaghetti, but nothing that's really, really English that I was happy to try out. I did go see the Phantom of the Opera while I was there. They have a wonderful theater district near Trafalgar Square, and there's a lot of famous icons, such as the Tower of London, that I visited, and just traveling around the city was very easy because of the London Underground. It's very famous. They had a discussion of even seeing a man with a tattoo of the Underground map on his back. That was the first subway I'd ever traveled on, so it was pretty difficult to figure out how to get around. Just getting onto the first train and figuring out how they all follow their lines and how to get to your destination took me a little bit the first day, but it was easily figured out. I took a bus tour, a double-decker bus, one of the days around the town, and that ended up being pretty convenient on the whole, although expensive way to see the city really quick and get an idea of what it is about. Go see the town square, go see the castle, go see the church, and that's about it. That's pretty much about how all the towns were on the whole. I was pretty sick of the bus tours by the end, but I stayed in London a couple days after landing in Heathrow, and then I took a Greyhound bus tour out to Stonehenge. We first stopped at Windsor Castle, and the Queen was not there that day, but it was pretty interesting. Not really huge on castles, but this is the last remaining guard post of all the castles that surrounded London. I think there are 8 or so. But after I visited Windsor, which really was more of a stop, we went to Salisbury, like the steak, like the cheap American steak. On this bus, they had a bunch of old people, and we stopped there and saw the cathedral, and then headed over to Stonehenge. Stonehenge was like a highlight of my trip. The stones were much bigger than I ever expected. I didn't feel this like eerie peacefulness that a lot of people claim it has, but it was very interesting to see these massive stones. They're much bigger than I had ever expected, and I took a lot of pictures of them. The perimeter is like 100 yards away from it, but still the stones are so large that they're easily dwarfing us. So we follow this large perimeter around it, and there's a capstone at the front. But it's supposed to be a solar calendar and a lunar calendar at the same time, and they had rolled these massive stones on logs from the southern coast of England. And that was really a highlight of my trip in the UK. Started out in the UK because they speak English all throughout it. And that's like an advantage for me because I had never been to another country where they don't speak English as the first language. Maybe a little bit French-Canadian, but still, you know, it's Canada. It's not France, it's not Quebec, it's Windsor. So I stay there, and then I took a short flight, many of the budget flights, to Belfast, Ireland, which is Northern Ireland. Ireland is split up into two countries, Northern Ireland on the top, which is smaller than the Republic of Ireland, to the south. There's a lot of really cheap airlines like EasyJet and Ryanair. I think Lufthansa is another one, where you're able to get a one-way flight for 30 euros. At the time, it was about $1.25 to $1.50 for 1 euro, and the sterling pound was almost $2 American dollars to one sterling pound. So a cup of coffee could cost $6 really easy in London, considering it was like the second most expensive city in the world. So I was kind of glad to leave there. I don't know how anyone would ever want to live there for that long. I mean, I guess they didn't control the world, but it's kind of a godless city now, and most people buy houses on 200-year mortgages and never even plan to buy them off, so it's hard for me to even want to live there, but maybe someday. So off I flew to Belfast, over the Irish Sea, and it was lots of green trees and countrysides, and Belfast, I didn't really realize that was the epicenter of the Irish Protestant Catholic War. I had actually forgot about the whole ordeal since I was little. I'm predominantly Dutch, maybe two-thirds, maybe like a quarter of French, with a little extra of English and whatnot. So when I was little, I saw Darby O'Gill and Little People, and used to dream about going to Ireland to find leprechauns and pots of gold, and my father told me that they were in civil war and I would need a bulletproof vest, so I had these dreams of me wearing a bulletproof vest, hopping through green fields and looking for leprechauns. It was, you know, very cute, campy vision that I had, but I didn't really remember it until I had landed, and everyone was very cautious, and you see the bomb barriers around the police officer, or the police stations, and I took a tour of the city on a bus just to get acclimated to it. And you would see all the murals throughout the city on the sides of buildings that were like militiamen in black and white, full two or three story paintings that says, you know, you killed our children over the fight for religion. And it's really hard to understand, like, you know, they hated each other because you're Protestant and I'm Anglican, and you know, why would someone kill me because I'm like one flavor of Christianity? I just never really understood that at all. And it was really confusing, and I didn't really understand it until much later, until I met a man after I was leaving Madrid. But I'll get to that at that time. So I landed in Belfast, and I saw the place where they built the Titanic, which is like a junkyard now and all rusted over, and I took the bus ride through all the really dangerous area and saw the Catholic Protestant line, and I saw the colleges they had there, and it was really like a lot of towns that you would see, but you could tell in the background there was a little bit of hostility. A woman mentioned how the Irish were having a new film industry, and I said, oh, I've seen a British film, you know, thinking it was Irish, and I named the title, and she's like, that's a British film, that's not Irish, and then she just stopped talking to me entirely, and I didn't really put it together that, you know, the British were, you know, the Anglican, and Northern Ireland is part of the UK, or Republic of Ireland is part of the EU, and I didn't really, you know, understand why she would be so bitterly cold to me on the street. And they explained to me that they could tell if you're Protestant or Catholic just by the way that you would say words or different buildings and pronounce things, or they would stop you in the street and ask you. But on the whole, I enjoyed the city. It was really a nice place that I wouldn't mind stopping through again, but I didn't like it as much as Dublin. I took the bus to the train station, rode the train station through the mountains more, I think. and then arrived in Dublin in that evening, and went out to Dublin, and I visited a pub where everyone was singing together in Irish and Irish songs, and it was all in English, but they had their thick accents, and it's really strange to see this really thick Irish accent, and it's normal, and everybody has it, and it's like this, I'm starting to get away from, you know, the American English accent, and just open my eyes that I am the foreigner now. And the train ride is really beautiful because you can see the cliffs of the Irish coast, and they would drop right off straight into the Irish Sea. And you know, I would really love to take a longer tour of Ireland and just go along the coast and see the padded rocks that Stirling and Kerry and things. But I was on my whirlwind tour and had to move on to Dublin. And Dublin, I really enjoyed. I walked all through the cobble streets and just remember stopping. I think it was Trinity College or University in the center of Dublin. They had like the greenest grass I'd ever seen in my entire life. And I went and had, you know, shepherd's pie and the other kind of traditional Irish food, which is, you know, usually based around potatoes. And I saw the St. Patrick's Cathedral, and they kicked me out as they were closing. And just, it was more of a unique culture, where England was just like a blend of America, but it was just a little bit different. You know, I don't really care for the English accent, but the Irish accent is interesting, and the people in Ireland had so much life and zeal, and, you know, they had a little bit of fire in their eyes, and they just, you could tell they weren't serious, and they liked the party, where America's, everyone's anxious, and all about the dollar bill, and, you know, they're more interested in their liberty, and Éireann go bra, you know, and independent Ireland. But I can only dream. So I stayed in a hostel. I stayed in Piccadilly Circus in England, and I stayed in a hostel in Dublin. The hostels were actually really nice, and I ended up liking the hostels more by the end of the trip than the hotels, because everyone is so friendly and eager to go out and meet people and do things, and you would meet people, and they would go with you for the day, and they'd travel around, and you'd find so much more with the people there than you did on your own. But when you're in a hotel, everyone, like, goes to their room, and they close the door, and you never see them again. There was, like, all ages, although it was primarily, like, college age to, like, young professionals. There were older men there, too. Like, you'd see a lot of old guys. Just, you know, they all came out, and people would share things, and like, alarm clocks were a problem, and, you know, making sure you had the right power adapters were an issue, too. I had this big clunky thing in my camera, and, you know, trying to find places to charge it and wake up in time to catch my, you know, next plane. So, I really enjoyed Dublin so far. Dublin was my favorite city. And I was really sad that I had to leave so soon. But early in the morning, I took a cab to the airport and almost left my passport in the cab. But the cabbie stopped and noticed it. And I was thankful that I could have been permanently in Dublin. So I flew to Scotland afterwards, doing a crisscross back up to Edinburgh. Edinburgh was a beautiful town. It was like Transylvania-esque, with these tall Gothic buildings that were, on the whole, darker colors and black, and like they were covered in soot. And there was this huge castle on the hill, and it was really beautiful. And everyone in Ireland was, Scotland was so friendly, and Edinburgh was just a marvelous city. It just reminded me of the Victorian era, with a little bit of the Gothic era mixed in. And I saw the castle, and I saw the palace where the crown jewels for the, you know, what the Queen of England were. And then later on, I just walked around the city, and, you know, this is where Harry Potter was written. And I saw the cafe where she wrote part of it. And the other cafe is now a Chinese restaurant where she would go, J.K. Rowling's, and try to get heat because her apartment was too cold or she couldn't afford it. Now she's richer than the Queen of England herself, Her Majesty. my cousin lives in outside Edinburgh, so he met up with me, and we had some tappies and haggies and some other Irish food and or Scottish food, and I stayed with him, and then after that I departed via airplane to Amsterdam. He concluded my trip up the UK, and my voyage began where I landed into the main land of Europe, where everything is changed around. They drive on the left in England, and so far everyone spoke English so far. You know, so far I think American English has the best accent, the traditional accent you hear on television in Hollywood, but the southern accent is nice, and I also like Irish accent, probably the best. Scottish accent is okay, but the British accent is pretty horrible on the whole, very ugly, and not nearly as bad as the Australian accent. And so I left the UK and landed in Amsterdam, and I could not tell you which side of the road you're supposed to drive on in Amsterdam. I'm pretty sure it is the right side, or the left side, like it is in America. And I think that related to the fact that Napoleon had conquered most of the countries besides England, and England and Napoleon were these arch nemesis during the time that America was becoming colonized, and therefore everywhere is they drive on the left side of the road because Napoleon was left-handed, and it had something to do with which side of the horse you would put your sword on, and you know, this is probably urban legend, but I don't know, because there's things in the stock industry where it takes 3 days for a stock to settle, because that's probably how long it took to ride from New York to Washington on a horse. So, who knows. But I arrived in Amsterdam, the main hub city of the Netherlands, and where it is legal to sell mushrooms and other minor drugs, and like and prostitution things are legal too, so it's considered the party center of the fall of Europe. And it was really actually a more beautiful city than I expected, and I couldn't read any of the street signs because they were all in Dutch. But the funny thing about the Dutch is the Dutch language is so like queer and to hear, but they all speak like perfect English too. So you'll hear them speaking in Dutch, and you can't pronounce a single word, and then they'll turn around and start speaking English, and you won't even realize that these are the same people, because you think that they're American, just how perfect their English is. But there was a lot of like rivers that ran through the city, and bikes were everywhere, tons of bikes, and some trolleys, and it was a beautiful city, and I would have liked to have gone more. I kept wanting to go to this museum, but I couldn't pronounce the name of the museum to ask for directions to get there, so I decided to just get back on the train and go to Belgium instead. In Belgium, there's Brussels, and in Brussels they have Le Grand Place, and this is this beautiful square in the middle of the city. And it's really famous, and some people suggest it's one of the most beautiful places in Europe. I really enjoyed it too, and I sat down on the street and had mussels, and I guess that's the big thing, mussels and Brussels. It was really the idea of someone on the train that I had met as I was riding on the TGV from Amsterdam to Brussels. I was going to go straight to Paris, but the trains were booked, and it worked out perfectly that I could go spend 4 hours in Brussels before I headed to Paris, and I really ended up enjoying that so much more just from the way it happened, and got in almost at the same time as if I had waited a little extra. So I walked around Brussels and ordered. I'm starting to remember all my French from high school. You learn things like au vert and sortie and oué. All the simple things, and how to order at small restaurants. But everyone speaks English, and they look at you, and they see your shoes, and you don't wear Euro treads, so they immediately know that you're American, because you have your jeans and you know, I guess it's an insult to call someone a cowboy. As soon as they find out you're American, you know, this is the time of election, they all want to know, is it Bush or Kerry that you are voting for? They're just waiting for you to say Bush so they can jump on you. And everybody hates Bush over there so much. I don't know so much about England, but I know everywhere that was not English speaking just like passionately hated Bush for no really good reason other than it was like inferiority complex. I thought like that Europeaners would be intimidated by Americans because of the gun crimes, and everyone talks about, well, there's so many gun deaths in America that you have to be in constant paranoia, and how we have these murder capitals of the world, and things like that. But really, the Europeaners, I just felt like they had more of like inferiority complex. They were jealous that this large nation would shoot up in 200 years and suddenly become this world power, and there's nothing they could do about it, where like many of the people had homes that were 1,000 years old. They had been there for 2,000 years, even, and that's like forever compared to America, even though that is still like small compared to like Persia and other parts of the world, China. So, they would identify me on the street as being American, just by the way I looked, and they'd speak to me in English. You know, sometimes they would address me in French, and I wouldn't realize it, and I don't know, it's funny, they could just tell by the way that I responded to simple things that, you know, I didn't speak the language, the indigenous language there. I tried hard to fit in and use my French, but I just never could get it exactly right. So I enjoyed Brussels. You know, I walked down this narrow street with, you know, all of the tables were lined out. This was in the fall. So it was really a good time. Before riding the subway back to the train station, I remember asking a police officer how to get to La Grande Place, and he just had no idea how to speak English, and this other guy was translating for me, and he was so happy to speak with me in English, because he had like struggled so hard to learn the language himself, and he just wrote down this map, and he like escorted me down to the right spot to get on, help me buy my ticket. He was just really friendly. I just really appreciated that, because I just love the French so, you know, so much, being a part of me, and ever since I was little, I've enjoyed it. I'm not sure where that had come from. So, the TGV was really amazing. It's this high-speed train, which it must go close to what an airplane travels, and it just like leans into the curves, and they serve you a full dinner, and it looks like an airplane cockpit on the inside, and when another train would pass, it would be like such a high-pitched, fast noise, it would startle you like a helicopter. And when I arrived in Paris, I stayed at the Peace and Love Hostel. Paris is really an amazing city on its own. It's got to be one of my favorite in Europe. I admit that I loved it before I even arrived, but it was just so interesting of French culture, just people walking around the baguettes on the street, and how you can buy fruit tarts at every other corner, and there's fruit markets, and everyone's just like sitting and walking around and speaking French, and it's like a truly foreign culture, but it's also, you know, very romantic at the same time, and very liberated compared to here. The cafes had chairs everywhere, and all the chairs faced the street, and everybody watched the street, where here in America, everyone looks at each other, and we get in our small areas, but they're more like watching the culture, and that was interesting to me. Everybody drinks cappuccino, and the sugar cubes are actually cubes. They're not little packets here, which was confusing, and nobody seemed to know what a latte was. I tried to explain it in my horrible, horrible English, French, so I never did do that. So I just started to appreciate my French cappuccino so much more now. And now when I go to like a European cafe here in America, I just love it so much more than I ever did before. And I didn't really like them until I had actually gone to Europe.
American cafe is more like a lodge with, you know, wood and walls and floors and tables and, you know, with a fireplace and a rack up on the wall. And there it's all like, you know, like metal tables with tile floors and posters on the wall, all kinds of things. Continuing on with the trip, I visited all the staples of Paris, you know, the Louvre, the Arc de Triomphe, the Eiffel Tower, the Tour Eiffel. I really enjoyed some of the smaller things like the Pablo Picasso Museum and just like being in the city was more peaceful. And I was just always surprised when, as soon as I saw the taxi cabs that were Mercedes-Benz, it just seemed so backwards that there'd be, you know, our cabs versus theirs. And you never saw any Jeeps or pickup trucks ever, or really SUVs. Granted that they have smaller space, but and gas has been so expensive there, but still it's just a lot different than here. And I appreciate it because I like American cars a lot less than I do like European. So I stayed in Paris for a few days and then I rode the train to Madrid. Madrid was a really cool city. I didn't know if I'd go there or not, but I changed my mind at the last minute because I had that Liberty, which I was happy to just flex my arm on and try out. And just not knowing where I'm going to be the next day is one of my favorite thrills. The uncertainty and spontaneity in life is wonderful for me, just where I am now. And I noticed getting on the train to Madrid that as soon as you step on the train, everyone is Spanish. Everyone uses Spanish currency, and everyone speaks Spanish, and nobody speaks French or English, because everyone is going to the same place. And the cultures are so isolated in their small areas that even though you're not really traveling that far, the cultural difference is huge. You could drive 2,000-3,000 miles across the U.S. and you still got McDonald's in the corners. So it's really an immense difference. It was just a beautiful train ride. I remember waking up in the morning and seeing the brown and beige rolling hills with the trees scattered everywhere. It was just a beautiful countryside as I came from the north down to the center of Spain. And I remember staying up all night in the cabin talking to this couple who, the woman was Spanish, but she had learned English in Paris so that her English had a French accent, but she did not speak French. I thought it was really interesting. And that she would speak to me in English, and they were trying to encourage me to speak to them in French, but my French was horrible. I only knew like 500 words. And, you know, I've been learning and getting much better, but still. And the train was interesting, and they wanted me to try some Spanish beer, and just starting to get a little bit more lost, but like I had eased into it at a good pace. So that when I had arrived in Madrid in the morning after sleeping on the couchette, I was ready to go out and see the city. And Madrid was really cool. I only spent, I think, half a day there. But I went and saw the Prado and seen La Niña's, Velázquez's painting. I saw it was a highlight for me because Velázquez is my father's favorite. And then, you know, just seeing the city, I love Madrid so much more than Barcelona, my next stop. And there's this big rivalry between Barcelona and Madrid. And if you meet one, they're like, oh, Barcelona is so much better, or Madrid is always so much better, and everything is so biased. And Madrid is like the center of bullfighting, and I really wanted to see a bullfight. And I didn't have time until Sunday, which was the next day, when I arrived in Barcelona, that I was able to go see one. And it turns out that in Catalonia, where Barcelona is, which is on the eastern edge of near the Mediterranean, that this is a very liberal state within Spain, and bullfighting had been outlawed. So no bullfighting for me. I went to the arena where the bullfight was supposed to be every Sunday, and hello, there's a circus there. That was really disappointing. I was really surprised that there was no burritos anywhere in Spain. I just confused Spanish culture with Mexican culture, which really is horrible because they're so different. And Spanish are so much different than the Latinos and Hispanic. And I think I found a new appreciation for Spain. And it was just so much cheaper than everywhere in bed, too, especially compared to England. It was half the price. So I stayed there, and then I departed from the station in Antioch, station, which was bombed not too long before, and I spoke with an Irish chap who was traveling to Barcelona also, and he said that they had just bombed that station. It really wasn't that nice of a station, but it had like a tropical, like a rainforest kind of thing inside. It was really smoky too, from everyone smoking cigars and whatnot in the station. I was there early for my train. So I talked to this Irish chap, and he explained to me the whole Irish Protestant thing and how the British had controlled the land. It really wasn't about religion at all. It was more about control of the land, how Irish wanted their freedom, and the British had just oppressed them. And anyone who was Anglican or Catholic, then they supported the Church of England. And that made a whole lot of sense, more sense, when I thought about like how that woman was so upset over the British film that I mentioned. And just really never put that together. I just thought that Christians were hating each other for no reason. So we spoke for a little while, and he explained some of those things about the culture to me, and just you're starting to get this vignette of Europe that you never had from outside of it, and you understand it so much more when you get there. I understand that all these pieces individually, but putting together the connection and seeing how people traveled and understanding where the mountains were geographically just gave me a more idea of what Europe was like, or I just had read about it in the past, and I just really enjoyed having a broader world view than before. And I tried to explain to him, you know, maybe why I liked Bush and why he wasn't perfect, but I would still vote for him. Which no one ever ended up did liking him, except for the few Australians. Everyone I met on the way, by the way, was either American or Australian, because I guess all the British backpackers and whatever from Europe go to China or America, and they don't travel in Europe because it's, you know, it's right there. Why would they go stay in hostels when you could just take a €30 flight to anywhere pretty much last minute? And the Dutch airlines were great because I missed a flight once and they just rescheduled me for the next flight. It would come along and it wasn't a big deal at all. So moving on to Barcelona, I enjoyed that. I stayed there a couple days and I met my friend Francieli there, who speaks French and Portuguese, and you meet these people on the way. Francieli ended up being a really good friend of mine, and I still communicate with her often, and she is currently living in the Foz do Iguaçu in Brazil, and she was traveling around. To speak of it, I actually had met a lot of people from Portuguese descent in Brazil. And, you know, you learn about these other countries that you never even hear about, and you know, in South America, it's primarily Spanish, in Argentina and all the countries except for Brazil, the largest one, where they speak Portuguese. And Portuguese is like a combination of French and Spanish together. And English is Germanic, even though it sounds the same. It has a lot of similar cognates. But those two are very similar, so that, you know, if you speak Spanish, you can understand a little bit of Portuguese and vice versa, and I think French works. So she spoke French, and I tried to work on my French with her, and after I toured around Barcelona was interesting because you see a lot of little kids out walking the streets at 11 o'clock at night, but it looked like a ghetto that you'd see in Detroit, and it just really, I couldn't put together how it was still safe, yet, you know, it looked so much like a derelict. So I had a good time. Me and Francieli got to know each other a lot better on the train to Marseille. Marseille is in the coast of France on the Mediterranean, and we talked about different things about her family and about Brazil and how much she loved Brazil, and it was interesting to learn about that. And then moving on, After I left her in Marseille, she recommended that I go see these different cities, and I followed her advice and went to Aix, which is in Provence. They call it Aix en Provence, from the city of fountains, and there's fountains everywhere. And I really love that city because it felt like a French provincial town, a place where people live on a smaller scale and had all the same elements of France. And then afterwards I went to Avignon, where the Pope had stayed for a period of time. And you got to see the old, giant church that they had there. And there was this big statue of Mary up on the top of the hill in gold. And it was just a very beautiful small city, all within Roman walls. I guess it used to be like a Roman fortress. And it was really an amazing little town. And you're getting saturated in the culture and you even think about it. You have to watch out in that because you can get hepatitis really easily from the water or whatever in the area. So I couldn't have my coffees and things that I wanted to without having hemoglobin, which I didn't have time to have either. So I stayed in Nice, which is right on the Mediterranean, for a day before traveling out of France into Italy to Rome. I wanted to visit Florence and Pisa, but there ended up being a transportation strike, so I spent some time in Rome, and on the whole it felt kind of torn down and like it was crumbling and dirty and hot, and the subways were the worst I had been so far. I really just didn't enjoy it at all, but I did really enjoy the Vatican, seeing the Vatican and going in and seeing where the Pope was and being part of the Basilica. I went to the top of it and saw the whole courtyard. I really enjoyed that part of it, but the rest of Rome itself, like the Colosseum and different things, were just not as cool. The subway was harder because they built Rome on top of the old Rome, so every time they start to dig a new subway, they would find something of significance and they have to stop. So it was a very long process. But Venice, I did love. It was really interesting to see the rivered streets and the men with the striped shirts pushing the little river boats around and going and seeing the artwork and all the masks everywhere. There's lots of stores with facades, and I met a couple there that were from California, Cal Poly, and we went around together and had dinner together and had some gelato, which is like an ice cream slushy kind of thing, which was really good, before I took off. And I listened to them, and I had listened to some other people at different hostels, and I was having very good luck with hostels from hostelworld.com, booking them like a day or two in advance because it was in the fall, it wasn't peak season. And someone recommended I go to Interlaken, which is in the middle of Switzerland, because I was getting burned out at this time on staying in cities and seeing the same castles and squares and things, that all the cities seem to be very similar to a point. And it would have been nice to see something different. And Interlaken is similar to Yosemite, with a valley and mountains and waterfalls pouring into it. And so I changed my trip itinerary. I went to Austria instead. And in Austria, I saw Salzburg, where the Sound of the Music was, and walked around the city. And then I went to Budapest. Budapest ended up being a surprise. It's in Hungary, Eastern Europe. And they had goulash there. And the city just at first felt really strange and foreign, like I was in a Russian city or something. And it had a different feel than all the Western world European cities had. And by the time I left, I just realized I really loved it. I met a girl in a cafe, and she helped me buy a piece of cake and just sit along the river and look at these old buildings, which were like much older than anything I had seen, just all lining the waterfront. And I wish I had spent more time in Eastern Europe. And after I went from Budapest, I went to Vienna, where Mozart and Freud had lived. And I walked the perimeter of the city, went and saw some operas at the Staats Opera, Don Carlos and La Traviata by Verdi both. And that was the most beautiful, amazing operas I had ever seen. And the pictures were like a Valeska's painting with the light done perfectly. And the music was like the best singing I had ever heard. And I think I paid 157 euros to go see Don Carlos. And I paid like 3 or 4 euros to stand in the back to see La Traviata. They were the best performances I'd ever seen live in my life. Afterwards, I took the train through the Swiss Alps to Zurich and then down into Interlaken and stayed in, I think, Bronner's hostel, which is very popular, and went up into the Alps the next day at Lauterbrunn and saw the massive waterfalls. They were actually very high and thin. They weren't large volume. And they weren't as beautiful as Yosemite, but it was a very amazing valley where all the animals had cowbells, you know, the sheep and the cows, and you could hear them on the hills. And there was a river that ran right down the middle of the valley with these huge straight-up cliffs, slopes. And, you know, you take these trains up the mountains to the top, and you can see Jungfrau in the background, and you know, there's little cities that are way up on the hill. There's no way to drive around. You can only walk. And it was just so different. And I really, you know, it was a peaceful break. And the Swiss Alps are such a beautiful range. Yeah, I really enjoyed seeing them. And it was just a refreshing break before I moved on. And I spent an extra day there just to recuperate and take more pictures. And I must have taken 3,000 pictures by this point. And I was taking a lot of night trains, which wears you out as it is, riding those trains. I'm back at the office this moment, and there's no parking spots. I took 2 vlogs on lunch to share this with you. Ah, I see one. So after that, I took a train to Prague, which people say is the best city in Europe. And you know what? It is amazing. There's the old town on one side, and then there's the newer town on the other side. But they're both, like, really cool. And the old town I liked much better, but really, you have to go to Prague. Everyone says Prague's the best. But Budapest is really cool, too. All those eastern ones were trumping the ones of the west. So it's just with the colors of the fall and the people walking around, and you know, I don't speak Czech, but and neither do they speak English, but I still always had no problem getting around. Everyone was able to tell me what things meant without asking more than 2 people. And Prague, I stayed there in a hostel outside of town, and you meet a few people here and there, and I bought my sisters this like Russian hat that was really puffy, and they ended up enjoying that a whole lot before heading back down to Munich. I had also visited Bern at one point in Switzerland, and had some cheese meal there that was really good. Cheese, it was a fondue. If you ever have fondue, it was good. But so that was like the majority of my trip. There's a lot of places that I've visited beyond that. I took the train to the airport in Munich, and then flew to Amsterdam, and then back home. And I really had a lot of trouble in Amsterdam because I had so many stamps in my passport. Because like every time you would pass through a country, they would stamp it. And I had been to 15 countries at one point, in 25 cities, and they would ask me like things about hostels that I wouldn't remember, and they would search my bags on all the trains the minute they saw the Amsterdam stamp in my passport. And it was really getting, you know, beat up from the traveling around, and I really had traveled so light so quickly. I had spent so many days on the train just because I could sleep on the train, and then that would save me traveling time so I could see more. And you know, I did see 25 cities. And there's so much more that I could tell you about the Europe trip. Just about how I had, like, you know, 7 or 8 different currencies in my wallet by the time that I had gotten back. And
the different people that I had met along the way. But it just was so much safer and fun and more easy to travel around and get to places than you'd ever imagine. And there's so much there. I had wished I had gone up to St. Petersburg or, you know, further east into Croatia. There's just so much to do, and I would just recommend that you would go. So this is my brief overview of Europe, and my name is Wyatt Galen Houts, and you've been listening to the Wyatt Galen Houts podcast in Mardi Gras stuffy nose today as I try to talk and drive and eat and have a cappuccino with you at Caribou and coming from you live outside of Chicago. Visit more podcasts at the havenofbliss.com website, and I look forward to sharing this with you and further ones in the future. So have a good day, and this is Wyatt saying adieu, au revoir, bon voyage, and until the next time, goodbye.